I'm about to feed him to the sharks right now.
Get him hype right now.
Yeah. You know the ground is on. Yeah. Everybody that trains, you know the game.
Yeah.
So let's get it. Slap it up, bump it, and roll.
Hey.
Yeah, that's the way that it goes.
All right.
Ain't no better way to better yourself in this game. You're feeling the growth.
That's
time on the mat. We put in the work. Believe it ain't easy, I know. But we train for the love of the game, the love of the art. Now slap it up, bump it, let's roll.
Let's roll, let's roll.
Welcome to episode 10 of the BJJ Campaign Podcast. My name is Jeff Boone. I'm an A3, blue belt, one stripe.
This is Phil Kors, A2, white belt, four stripes.
Welcome, audience. We appreciate you guys listening, supporting us. I had a few suggestions from the audience, and what we want to cover first is when to tap. Right? I mean, it sounds simple, right, mm-hmm. Phil? But there are some nuances to when to tap.
Right.
And whenever you're new, you know, I would say that if you're in an unfamiliar position, right, and there's discomfort, then tap, because mm-hmm. the discomfort can then get even more uncomfortable and possibly lead to an injury. So I guess let me expand on that. If you're a new white belt and you're caught in a bad position, right? And, you know, it may or may not be painful, but, you know, especially in different areas of the body, especially with arms, you know, if you're doing an arm bar, you've got your opponent's hips going against a single joint in your arm.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, although it might not feel that bad to start with, if you're already there, tap, right? I mean, this is the objective of this is to train as much as possible and to stay injury free whenever you're doing that.
Right. And also another thing is kind of knowing your training partners, kind of trusting. Like I know when you have the Kimura, you know, if you're not going to try to break my shoulder, you know, let me kind of work the, see if I can figure out maybe how to get out, see if I can kind of deal with it, try to change positions. I'm aware you have it, you know, I know where we are, but I also know, trust that you're not going to break my shoulder off, where if it's somebody new, you know, that I don't know, I would probably tap when I know they have it. So, you know, kind of because that trust isn't at the same level.
Yeah, and conversely, when you have the Kimura on me, I know that you're going to let go of it, yeah. So I don't tap.
That's a great training partner.
but no, very, very good point. Know your training partners. You know, obviously, if, you know, Phil, you're a four-stripe white belt, and, you know, if you're going up against someone who's maybe physically bigger than you, and which is a lot of the mm-hmm. the team, right?
Yeah.
Then, and they're maybe of less experience than you, you know, they may be going a little harder, right? As opposed to knowing yet fully how to kind of be in control.
Yeah, there's a lot of positions that you'll get into where you're just, before you kind of have the experience with it, you don't know if you're necessarily doing it right, or, you know, you don't know if it's working, you know, you don't know what they're feeling because you haven't been in the position enough times to kind of, to have that experience of what's happening.
Yeah. I mean, unfamiliar positions. I mean, that's number one. You know, I enjoy the leg lock game, right?
I mean,
and I am going to positionally try to enter into the leg lock game whenever I'm at a disadvantageous position. In other words, if someone is on top of me, I might go single leg X and then try to get to Ashi position. But especially if that person's a new white belt, I'm not going to go for a heel hook or a straight ankle lock. I might get in the position, but I'm not going to try to finish the move. I just want to get to that advantageous position, change over, and then start working another game. But that helps with the entries, right? That's helping me. That's also helping you, because
it does, because it's helped me become more familiar with the position. You know, you hear about how some of the footlock stuff can tear up a knee, and you hear that it doesn't necessarily hurt until it's too late.
Heel hook specifically, yeah.
You know, so that kind of makes you a little weary, where it's before you understand what's happening, you don't necessarily know how far to push it, so you kind of get that experience. So it helps to, when someone takes your approach of, you know, put you in the position so you can kind of get used to it, tells you how to defend it, kind of explains what's happening and what your goal is with the submission, and what I should be looking for an escape and when it's too late.
Yeah, and to that point, if you're not familiar with that position, just like we said, tap early. It's not a big deal. And also, if you're an upper belt and doing that, you know, I think that is a good way instructionally, especially with the newer white belt or anything, to actually show them, hey, you know, if I get in this ashigarami position, you should push the heel down, put your butt over the leg to be able to get out of it. I don't have the heel hook or the straight ankle lock anymore. So really good thing there. Also, let's talk about tapping to pressure.
Yeah, that's something I've seen people do, you know, when they kind of first start out, because you don't realize how much pressure people can really put on. You know, people tend to be a little nicer with me, I think, because I'm smaller a lot of times. And I've had people, like, you know, where I think I'm good, and then they turn on the pressure, and it's a different feel. Like, specifically doing that drill of standing up against the wall, which I struggled with you one time, but I vividly remember Terry turning on the pressure one day, and I was like, oh man, the way I like let out a, he was like, are you okay?
But, yeah. And you know, you're at the point with four stripes, it's not really acceptable to tap the pressure.
Yeah.
I mean, and listen, you guys may have a different opinion. Please be safe if you're, you know, if you've got pre-existing injuries or any back issues, neck issues, and you've got pressure on those areas, yes, I'm not saying don't tap there. But it is a general rule, after you get, I would say, three stripes on your white belt, it's not really acceptable to tap to pressure anymore. What you should be doing is you should be making yourself comfortable in those uncomfortable positions. In
yeah, other trying words, to redirect.
Have that mindset that is clear mind, and that you understand that you're in a bad position, and now it's time to think your way out of that bad position, because that's what you're going to have to do further down the road. Right now, maybe you don't get out of that position, or, you know, if it's a stack pass, a Gracie pass, for instance, maybe you just go ahead and push your own leg past it so that you can get out of that pressure situation. Yes, you are now in the person's side control, but that's probably better than the point where you were. Not positionally, but for the feeling, the pain that you're experiencing,
yeah.
Right?
No, I don't really necessarily believe in much in tapping to the pressure, when, because there's just ways to, you know, move around sort of and try to redirect the weight, whether it's frames or just, I mean, I get stacked all the time, as you know.
Yeah, you do.
So it's like I've figured out ways to deal with it, just between either trying to transition out or essentially becoming more flexible, because it just happens so much, so I'm kind of used to it.
It does definitely make you more flexible.
So it's, you know, you kind of figure out how to deal with it, and just I can't necessarily explain how I move, but like, it's not that you're stacking wrong, but I can kind of position myself to kind of deal with it, at least for a while.
Move your hips out from the pressure, right? I mean, that's what you're basically doing, is trying to move your hips away from the pressure.
So I can survive there for a while before I need to move out. Ideally, I just, you know, when you get stacked.
You can survive that stack. You've been practicing that for a long time, Philly.
Kind of always happens, but ideally I just wouldn't get stacked, but working on that.
Yeah. And so, you know, I can't speak for upper belts, but me being a blue belt, you know, I'm going to explore more options before tapping. I'm familiar with a lot of different positions. Therefore, I want to make sure that my opponent has, or my training partner has the submission, right? If it's a choke, I want to make sure that if I don't tap, that I'm going out. I'm not saying that I'm on the verge of going out. That's not what I'm saying at all.
That's what it sounds like.
It is not what I'm saying at all. I want to make sure. I don't know if this even I can even describe it correctly, but I want to make sure that they're not taking any shortcuts on the submission itself.
Right.
right? Uh-huh. You know, I want to make sure that, yes, you know, it is there before I tap. And explore every option to get out of it before that. And I think as you go up in belt rank, purple, brown, I think it even gets more so that way.
Mm-hmm.
But anything else you want to add to that, Phil?
No, yeah, I try to do that the same thing with the chokes there. And like when you were on my back the other, I think it was last Sunday. And it's kind of stuck, so I just kind of spun in and spun the wrong way and hung myself. But, you know, we're exploring. So
100% the wrong way. 100% the wrong way. And was it a bow and arrow choke that you were doing that on? It was kind of a variation of a
I couldn't tell you.
Of a bow and arrow choke that, that
I think I did the same thing before, and you kind of looked at me and you were like, that wasn't supposed to work. And I was like, yeah, I guess, you know. And then it didn't work the next time.
It's awful when it doesn't work, right? Because it's super, super on, super fast. So,
yeah
that's a for sure thing. Yeah, and that's part of the process, right? Is you got to do those things wrong to see, oh my gosh. Well, yeah, it might work one time, but then the next time when you do it and you hang yourself and almost go out immediately, then that's probably not the best approach to take.
Yeah, and my overall approach has been tapping, you know, quick with joint locks and with chokes I can kind of play.
No, I think that's a really good point. You know, just in fairness to the chokes, you know, I think it was on the BJJ Brick podcast where they had a guy who'd had a dissection of his carotid artery from actually in class for that. And I'm not saying... Well, it sounds like I'm saying exactly the opposite thing, but I'm not saying that let the choke get so deep that you're going out. I'm saying make sure that it's deep enough to where if you let it continue that you would go out. I guess if that makes sense.
I think it's an experience thing. Where you just got to kind of play with the line and know when you're caught and know what the boundaries are. But if you never play with the boundaries, I mean, I've been in a triangle multiple times where I've been almost put out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I kind of know where that line is.
Have you ever been put out?
Real close. Landon thought I went out. I didn't, but...
Yeah. You were probably out.
Probably for like a half second or something, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been close a couple times. You know, I'll play with that, but...
Yeah. The closest time with me was with Ryan Leggett. I don't even remember what it was. I might have done the same thing that you did and turned into the joke, and it was like if you've never gone out to a choke, it closes in your vision closes in peripherally and just gets narrow and narrower. And I was really narrow, and he let it go. I tapped, and he let it go, and boy, that was an enlightening experience. I wasn't right for a minute or so after that. But no, I've never really gone out to that. But you probably shouldn't take it to that level. You know, it makes your training partner feel bad. You know, and certainly probably not the most healthy thing. Although it is a choke, it's just a blood choke. It's not not going to kill you. So moving on to the next topic, you know, and this is one that is somewhat missed. It was mystifying to me. Whenever I heard people talking about it, when I was listening to podcasts or browsing through YouTube or anything like that, and that is developing your game,
mm-hmm.
right? Doing things that maybe because of your body type you're better at.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I'm a bigger guy and. There's kind of two separate things in this category, and that is what kind of found me in my game, and that I believe whenever I took a private with our professor John Plyler and went over that entire Kimura series, well, not the entire Kimura series, but three things in the Kimura series from Half Guard, and went through that with him. The Kimura kind of found me. I found I had a natural predilection to not being bad at it from the very beginning.
Yeah.
And so I gravitated obviously towards that, and I worked it. And after I found that, right or wrong, I think it's the right approach, but I explored it even more and really worked for probably 2 months on just the Kimura. That I wanted to submit people with just the Kimura, right? And not all the time, obviously, whenever we're doing positional sparring and everything like that, not all the time there, but whenever we were rolling or anything like that, I was going, why are you laughing? Why are you smiling at that?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you got a lot of energy today. I did have
double the intake of coffee that I normally have. So that may be one of the reasons.
I like it. But no, I totally understand what you're saying, where it's just like, so, we've talked about it before, and like in my head, certain things just make sense, you know, when I try to do it. Like the same Kimura, like the same move. Like I hear the same instructions you do. And like I'm saying in my head, I have it tight to my body. And you're just like, it's not, you know. It's the same thing like with that double leg takedown. In my head, my head's up. I'm getting guillotined, so it's not, you know.
For the audience, Phil's head is never up whenever he shoots in on a double leg.
No.
I'm trying to find an analogy of what you look like whenever you shoot in for a double leg, but it escapes me right now.
It's essentially an elaborate guard pull.
Elaborate setup for the Von Flew joke.
It's not the best. But in my head, I think my head's up, you know, and it's just one that my body doesn't get at the moment, you know. So there's working with Garrett and stuff where he's showed a different variation of basically just piling my face into the guy's chest. That forces my head to be upright. That's like the only way I kind of get it. So that's what I've been playing with. But there's certain things that, like you're saying on that side of things, that just do make sense. I can specifically remember like one of the first classes where we worked together, we did the hip bump sweep where you were very surprised at how well I did it. And you were like, that's going to be one of your moves. And I remember laughing at the time because I was like, these are all my moves. But I didn't understand what you meant, and kind of looking back on it, that hip bump sweep is a go-to for me. Like it makes sense. I can get up quick and do it efficiently, and it's not, I don't have to think about, you know, the steps of it. It just makes sense, you know. But the Kimura, in my head, I'm holding it here, or I'm locking it out, and next thing I know, he's basically got my shoulder in the uncomfortable position. He's basically either in top half guard at this point or something, you know. It's gone terribly wrong. So, you know, it just doesn't make sense. But
yeah, and I mean, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, and to, for all those folks out there who are maybe four stripe white belt who work with the new guys, and like Phil and I do, when you're out there, you know, I noticed it actually with Cody when we were doing the triangle. Man, his triangle probably better than mine from the very beginning. And right. I told him, I said, this is your move. This is what you should be focusing on, because you're really naturally good at it. Look for that in your, you know, look for that in your training partners, because they're not going to think that, you know, maybe you felt, I don't think with the hip bump sweep that you felt confused, because you were very good at it from the very start. And maybe that clarity will translate into, oh, I'm good at this, so let's explore it more. But definitely, if your partner says, you're really good at that, this is probably going to be one of your moves, then that's probably something you're going to work on and maybe even take pride in, right?
Yeah, try to get it, clean it up. I mean, I, not that I had all the details down, but I understood the general movement, you know, mm-hmm. Of getting the hip higher or whatever. Not even understanding the high hip concept at that time, like that, I didn't understand, but I was able to just do it in that one aspect. I worked with it with John later and clean up a lot of things about not, you know, essentially Kimura gripping the elbow. You're kind of just trapping and more going to the side than driving through, and mm-hmm. different details like that have come to my attention afterwards. But you know, that became one of the, it still is one of the better sweeps I have, you know, higher percentage, because I do it better.
Oh, for sure you do.
And then that's just, I mean, it's naturally going to become part of your game, because you're going to gravitate towards what works, mm-hmm. you know, and you kind of expand from there. So that, you know, that's a natural part of it, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. So there's those things that kind of come natural to you. And then there's those things that you kind of gravitate toward because you have a genuine interest in them, right? What is it for you? What's the technique that maybe you didn't feel like you were the greatest at the beginning, but you really enjoyed it, so you kind of...
Oh, it's Kimura. 100%. I totally see, like, when you say you see the elbows, it's like, I see the elbows all the time. And I can see when mine is not in the position. I can feel when people grab it, you know. Mm-hmm. I just can't do anything about it when I have it. But I see the value of that position and the versatility of, I mean, I've seen him grab it from everywhere, you know, just sitting. I've seen him like roll up to a person and kind of like roll over and then he has their back, you know. And it's an incredibly
versatile position, right. That's for sure.
And when it is done properly, it's like, it's super high percentage, you know?
Well, it's definitely high percentage for the finish, but also for just facilitating you getting into a better position. Yeah. Like you said, taking the back or anything of that nature, or passing the half guard, you know? Mm-hmm. It definitely is super helpful with that.
So that position immediately like intrigued me because... I think when you were going through that phase at first was probably within the first like 3 months of me rolling a lot. And I mean, you were hitting on me nonstop, you know, and I was just like, that is everywhere, you know, and that's probably part of the reason why I was immediately drawn to it and started trying to go for it. You know, but it's just something that's a work in progress. But that for me, it was the Kimura.
You'll get it. And hey, after John's seminar,
Saturday,
Spartan, Fight to Win Spartan.
Can't get worse.
Can't get worse. We're going to drill a lot more, right? We're going to drill it a lot more.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. But what was yours?
So what I gravitated toward was, it definitely was the leg locks. I think I was first exposed to it. You know, I started watching the EBI, Eddie Bravo Invitationals, submission only tournaments and kind of got into it, kind of became a fanboy of Gordon Ryan and Gary Tonin and Eddie Cummings and they were all, you know, part of that Danaher Death Squad and so I just started looking up on YouTube John Danaher and found it really interesting. And then Gordon Ryan was down at Gibson Saul's place down in Columbia for a seminar, specifically for their leg lock kind of program that they run at the Henzo Gracie Academy. And man, that was really my first exposure to doing it. And you know, I was certainly as bad at it as you were at the Kimura to begin with, because it was a new concept for me and I hadn't drilled it much. Before I went, I made sure that I looked up the YouTube stuff and what they worked off of, which was a lot of the single leg X entries into Ashigarami. So I worked and drilled that before I went, which was really helpful. But it was just something that I found really interesting, because in their philosophy is, don't go for the leg locks when you're in an advantageous position. In other words, when you're on top in the better position, work on passing guard and doing stuff like that. Don't fall back into the leg locks. But that's what intrigued me, was it whenever you were playing that bottom position in guard, and if someone stood up on you, getting in that single leg X, and at the very least, if you get in that position and you get to that Ashigarami position, even if you don't finish your opponent, you're going to get to a better position and be in the top position. And that part of it really intrigued me about the leg locks, to have a more versatile way to do sweeps to get on top.
Go ahead. The other thing about kind of building the game and everything that I don't think people talk about a lot would be kind of like what your personality is, you know? I don't have that super aggressive, like, drive personality, you know? That's not me. More kind of quiet, and I tend to be a little more reactionary So I'll sit in people's guard and wait for them to do something before I try to pass, or I'll be in the bottom of the mount and I wait for them to attack before I try to time or counter. You know, I don't. I'll mount people where they'll just kind of, not necessarily flail, but they'll go kind of try to rock you off, get you, throw you off or whatever. And that's not my approach ever. But I think the personality goes a long way into how they develop their game and what they like to do and their strategies. And
yeah, no, I totally agree. And you know what, too? I mean, it's really helpful. Really helpful to seek the counsel of your professor, or if you're taking private lessons from someone else, seek their counsel and say, hey, you know, I kind of want to develop more of this style. What do you think? And they'll either say, well, yeah, that you can do that, but here's probably at the level that you're at now, here's probably what you should be developing mm-hmm. in your game. So, you know, certainly gravitate towards those things that you naturally enjoy, right? Because that's a big part of it. If you enjoy doing it, gravitate towards it. Because if you enjoy doing it, you're going to drill it more and you're going to have fun doing it. And that will translate into you being better at it.
Sure.
And if it's something that you don't enjoy, but it is really something that's pointed out by your professor or someone else, then you should probably work on that. You know, you should probably say, hey,
what don't you enjoy?
There's nothing I don't enjoy, Phil. Okay. I've heard people not enjoying certain things, but I haven't found it yet. So good
can't
point.
Relate.
And which brings me to the point is enjoy, be happy with your progression, but don't ever be satisfied.
Yeah, I don't think you can be. Because, I mean, everybody else is progressing. It probably would be really boring if you just did the same thing all the time and either it always worked because nobody else reacted to it or it always didn't work because you never tried anything else.
Yeah, and satisfaction breeds complacency. You know, if you're never satisfied, then you're always going to be inquisitive about other things, and then those other things are going to you know, sprout little tendrils that go out in every different direction of jiu-jitsu, and it's going to allow you to keep an open mind to learning all the techniques, because that's really what it's all about, is having a proficiency at all techniques. I'm not saying you're going to master all of them,
mm-hmm.
because I was watching I'm getting a little sidetracked here, but I was watching a video. It was one that you sent me, and it was specifically, it was Murillo Bustamante, and it was a YouTube video, and he was talking about the mount.
Yeah.
And he said, I've been doing jiu-jitsu for 40 years,
mm-hmm.
and I've been closely studying the mount for 15.
Yeah. And that's like a topic you covered day one.
It blew my mind. Specific, and by the way, Murillo Bustamante, really good at jiu-jitsu. And it blew my mind in the simple concepts that he was given, you know, and just to share a few, or one or two, is that, you know, a lot of times we're taught to kind of squeeze the opponent whenever we get in mount to secure it. He said, don't do that. It's like, what? He said, no, don't do that. Spread your legs wider. Put your feet under their butt like a tire chalk or a spoon, I think is the analogy that he used. And you're going to in flow with the position. And I thought, wow, man, that's really cool that guy's been thinking about this and studying this for 15 years. And mm-hmm. he just now shortened my learning curve 13 and a half years on the mount. Now, obviously, I don't know everything Murillo Bustamante knows about mount, but it was a very important concept.
Yeah, I think that concept is huge. And the same one Steve was talking about at the last seminar we had, where a top thing, like, because the, you know, being mobile is super important and kind of flowing, like you're saying. It's the reaction is, or the natural, I think, reaction when you're on there is to kind of just squeeze the guy and try to just hold him down, which, you know, you probably have a harder time learning than I do because you can hold a lot of people down that way, you know, and that doesn't work for me. So like being, trying to be mobile and figure out other things makes a lot of sense. And that knees thing makes a lot of sense where it's your base essentially. But yeah, that's some really cool concepts, and that being mobile thing is a huge thing that even I see with some people that are, you know, my size, but if we're doing the, you know, side control, drill, say, and they're holding super tight, and it's so much easier to roll them when they do
that. So much easier, because they're reacting to every little input that you give, and that input that you're giving is going to be for your escape, a reaction that you want out of them.
So that happens, and then sometimes you see the same person come right back around in line and squeeze harder, you know, which is
perfect.
The opposite of what you're looking for, but yeah, no, that was a cool video.
Yeah, no, it really was, and you know, again, just developing your game. I can't say it enough, and that is that the things that you gravitate towards and you enjoy, explore them further, and do, you know, do a private lesson with your professor, or if somebody else is in town that's really good at that, then seek that from them. Mm-hmm. And I guess just a kind of a tangent on that is, if you're doing a lesson from someone, I'm probably at some point in time going to take a lesson from Lucas LaPree, right? Down, he was in Charlotte, and he's an 8-time world champion now. Mm-hmm. And his guard passing is crazy, crazy good. Like I've done with Lee, whose guard passing is really good. Take a lesson in what they're really good at, what they're known for.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so that you can steal that part for your game. I'm not saying you're going to be
as good. That's always such a cool thing. And they did that a lot at the Origin Camp, where, like, in those Q&As, when it was, like, it's not that you can't teach me something you're not excited about, but you're going to teach the thing you're excited about so much better with so many more details, because you just have so much more, you just know what works, you know, and why other things have failed, and you have better answers. Because, like, there's a lot of times I'll try to explain something to somebody, and the best I can say is, you know, don't do that because somebody better than me is going to take advantage of it. You know, I don't know why to tell you. I don't know how to explain that it's wrong. I just know that it's wrong. And if you try that with, you know, somebody better, it's not going to work.
Right. Right.
But when they're excited, it's a lot better instructions.
Yeah. Yes, it is. So on to our next topic, and that is, Phil, have you ever had someone that's more experienced than you suddenly roll kind of harder with you?
Yeah, usually at the beginning, to kind of set the, if you want to set the pace or set the tone or whatever. But it's never, can't really remember a time where I felt like somebody was just doing it maliciously, you know?
No, I don't think it's ever malicious, but I'm just going to share experiences with you that I've had. I've said it many times. Whenever I started, I was a big oaf, and I was an asshole to roll with whenever I first started jiu-jitsu, because I was bigger, I had a wrestling background, and I went hard. Now, I was never that way with people that I was extremely more physically dominant than.
Yeah.
But, you know, especially the upper belts, I was aggressive when rolling. And it's funny because it was Ryan Leggett. I think I peeled his fingers one time. That, by the way, that's a no-no. If you peel somebody's fingers, the roll's going to turn up quite a bit if that happens. Because those are really, small joint manipulation is really a big source of injury. So I think I did that. And then, you know, he went and submitted me repeatedly for the rest of the 4 minutes and 30 seconds of that 5-minute round.
Yeah.
And I was kind of too stupid to realize And then I think someone pointed out, they were like, what did you do to the legs over there? Why did he give you such a beating? I was like, I don't know, man. I have no idea. He was like, and so I was like, I was like, hey, man, I think I did something. You know, what was it? He's like, you peeled my fingers. I was like, okay, I got it. So that kind of stuck with me. And I had a similar situation the other night. I didn't go that route, although I think it's a perfectly acceptable route to go. But I just, after class, told that person, I said, hey, you know, it's not really cool to peel the fingers. And, you know, you might want to reconsider that, because somebody else, if you do that, they might turn it up on you quite a bit. And it might not be a fun experience. And they are like, oh, cool, thank you, because they didn't know.
Yeah.
You know? See, you've never rolled like a dick, though.
I've never had that personal experience. Usually for me, it's people go, especially when they don't know me, like when I first meet them, if they're an upper belt, they might go like hard for the first roll or two. And then most of the time they were obviously way better being upper belts. Didn't take long. And because I don't think I really ever flailed too much or was too spazzy.
I don't think you ever were.
Hard to kind of look back honestly at that, but in my head, I didn't think I was too bad. But typically from that, then they would let me work. I mean, I got submitted constantly, but I never felt like, you know, anybody was doing it like turning it up.
No, I agree. I mean, looking retrospectively on that, I don't ever remember a point in time where you were you rolled.
I think it comes back to the personality thing. Most of the time, because I was unsure of what to do and where to go next, I spent a lot of time essentially watching. You know, I didn't try to initiate too much stuff where I think, you know, people with the wrestling mindset, background, whatever, they know to get on top. They know body position stuff and kind of what they want to do, kind of like you. And maybe like even Talese, he's newer, but he has a really good idea of, you know, body positions. He just doesn't just give me the top, you know. And
that, yeah.
That's something I would do. And I see a lot of people, new people do that, where they just kind of fall back and try to, you know, maybe close the guard or something because it feels safer, or they don't know what to do. So they just kind of fall back and that personality thing. But I never really had that experience.
Yeah. So for the folks that are new to jiu-jitsu, and that's probably a lot of our audience, right? It's people that are new to jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
You know, I would, if someone turns it up on you, I would ask, say, hey, and maybe even take a really humble approach to it. Hey, what did I do that made you turn it up? And, you know, I'll share something. It was from Sunday Rolls a few weeks ago. One of our warriors out there, Derek Coffin, he comes to our Sunday Rolls. He's I think, a two-stripe white belt now.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my good friends that I got into jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Trains with Mark Kukro over in Harrisonburg. And we were at the end of a round, and, you know, it was a really mild roll. I was letting him work positions and everything. And then I looked over at the clock, and there was 30 seconds left. And so I had put it in my head as a goal, kind of like almost a competition mindset whenever I did it, that I wanted to sweep him and submit him before the end of that 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I should have told him that before the round started, right? That wasn't cool by me. That wasn't something that you know, because I turned it up at the end of the round. And Derek, being a thoughtful person, he said, "Did I do something where you turn it up?" I was like, "No." I said, "I said, man, I'm sorry." I said, "I in my own head, I just turned it up because I wanted to simulate a competition atmosphere, and I didn't tell you that beforehand."
Mm-hmm.
And I apologized to him, and I don't, maybe it was ego, I don't think it was, but it was just something. It's little games that I play.
Yeah, whenever it's a challenge.
Yeah, whenever I'm rolling. But that's probably not the right person to do it with, you know.
That's kind of tough. Because it's not like you did anything necessarily wrong or dirty, you know?
Yeah.
You just kind of changed up the pace for the 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I didn't think anything of it when that happened.
Well, I think about that stuff, right? Because, you know, we're doing, and I want to be honest with our audience, and I want to be honest with myself and explore kind of why and if it was coming from a place that was ego-driven to get it out of there.
Yeah, and you know, thinking about it, Nick down at Charlotte, I'll watch him because I'm fascinated with the way he makes grips. Every way I move, he grips, and it seems to be a pattern. So I try to kind of sort of figure... I'm not going to. I kind of try to watch to try to figure out what he's doing. Because I'll move
Nick,
one way.
By the way, for the audience, 4-stripe brown belt, really good at jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, and I'm fascinated when he's reacting to my... Like, if I'm in the garden trying to, like, move or set up for a sweep or whatever, he's always reacting, and it's like a pattern, you know? It's like a system or whatever you want to call it. So it gets my attention. So I tend to roll really slow with him because I'm always watching. And he did, you know, later on in the last, I think it was the last open mat I was there, he said, do you want to have like a competition style round?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he said it beforehand. So obviously there's no real competition there. He's much better than me, you know, but I get what he's saying where it's like, he's going to roll a little bit harder and he's going to get to what he wants to get to. And I'm going to do my best to defend essentially and survive. I mean, that's,
yeah,
it didn't go well for me, but you know, it's necessary, but he did mention it beforehand, thinking about what you say.
Exactly. I think that was my mistake,
okay.
Right?
Yeah,
I think that was my mistake, is not, but I wasn't going that way the entire time. Maybe I should just set it in the middle of the, or whenever I thought it, that I'm gonna, I don't know. Maybe I should have said, hey, last 30 seconds, I'm gonna try to sweep and submit. I don't know if that's appropriate either.
I don't know.
He's a good friend. I mean, we can talk trash to each other. So.
Yeah, I mean, I got to talk trash to you all the time. I think it's that the fun part of, well, specifically seek you out in that guard passing drill, because you can't sweep me because you're trash. So, it's just...
For the audience, Phil was talking an extreme amount of trash last night in one of our... Sparring is pass, sweep, or submit. I was on bottom, and I baited one side for the flower sweep and went to the other side. And the flower sweep, as you guys know, I've mentioned before, it's my favorite sweep. I love it. It's a great sweep. And Phil, you take it from here. Go ahead. I wanted to get your...
Yeah, so and basically what Jeff is saying is he baited one side because he can only sweep one way. And totally stout defense. He couldn't sweep me, and he had to resort to tricks and quickly swept me the other way very efficiently.
Was it...
Never saw it coming.
Was it 3 or 5 seconds after you said, you'll never flower sweep me?
I think it was more like 10.
Was it 10?
Let's not gas it too much.
Yeah, I think your mind is playing tricks on you. I don't think
it felt like a long time. The center line was compromised. Everything was going downhill, and then I was swept. But talking trash is what makes it fun.
Yeah.
I like to... Like, people fight the grips now when I'm in the collar, and I try to convince them that, like, relax, I'm not going to choke you. They don't always believe me, and I'm lying. I am going to try to choke them.
You always try to choke them.
I think when you know the training partner and you're comfortable, talking trash is fun.
Yeah, I mean, obviously. Don't talk trash. Yeah. New guy comes in here.
Yeah,
I'm going to own you. You know, it's not cool. That's not cool. It's the people you've been training with a year, 2 years, whatever you're wherever you're camping.
But I told you last night, you've probably swept me with that flower sweep, like, set up one way, the other side. It's probably happened to me 25 times. But because I never made a point to talk trash or whatever, that it was like a thing, you know, we'll see. But now I feel like I'll see that coming, or I'm more aware of it. I don't know. Your setups are not good.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Well, hey, was good enough last night. That's all I'm saying. I guarantee you won't put the wrong leg up again.
Yeah, that was not good.
Yeah, but then I'll change to the scissor sweep when you put that leg up. It's fine. It's no problem.
Good luck. That's all I'm saying.
So winding it down, you know, you, our warriors out there, we see what you want to hear about. And actually, Derek, who I was just talking about, he sent in a suggestion. He said, hey, would you guys let us know sources that you learn from when you're not in class?
Yeah.
Like, because there's a lot of, it's not like 10 or 15 years ago. There's a lot, if you want a defense to the Vaughn flu, then James Klingerman has that defense to the Vaughn flu choke out there online that you can probably find on YouTube. You know, and so just wanted to go over a few sources. What are a few of your favorite sources, Phil?
I've liked that guy. I might be saying it wrong, but the Australian guy, Lachlan Giles.
Yeah.
His page.
Craig Jones's instructor and Kit Dale.
It's something like with the dinosaur MMA. I'm blanking on the name. But if you look that guy up, his YouTube is, I like his teaching style. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And he says God funny.
Yeah. So. Yes, he does. He does talk funny. He is Australian. Yes.
But no, I've liked him. He has good stuff. And then the, we were talking earlier, you mentioned the Chew Jitsu guy.
Chewjitsu.
Yeah.
He's got a YouTube channel.
I've watched his videos, and the funny thing is I've never watched like his instructional stuff. I always kind of gravitate towards his mindset stuff and his approach stuff. And for me personally, being new, I'll watch a YouTube video. I've said it before, I can watch technique in class and I'll remember 30 minutes later. I don't really get that deep into YouTube videos that I'm going to try to remember tomorrow. It's not going to happen. Like, if I don't drill it immediately, it doesn't stick, you know? It's getting a little easier, but it's still not the same. But I gravitated towards his mindset stuff because I think that was, you know, like, they have, like, the ones, like, when are you ready to compete? And I was like, oh, when am I ready to compete? You know, that type of stuff.
Yeah. The answer is whenever you wonder when you're ready to compete, you're ready to compete.
Right.
But yeah, so jiu-jitsu is a great resource. You know, I would also go and say, you know, go and like BJJ-specific pages, right? BJJ Times, they put out, what, 3 or 4 videos a day. Jiu-Jitsu Times.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, Jiu-Jitsu Times is a really good. And one of the people that we're going to have on the podcast here in the coming weeks, Samantha Seth, she's actually going to be writing for Jiu-Jitsu Times, doing some freelance work for them. So I'm really excited about that because their blog posts are really good.
Yeah.
So, you know, like their page and you'll get that on your feed, right? And you might be stuff you're interested in. I'm a member of the Over 40 BJJ Engage group, Stephen Whittier's group. And they put out a bunch of technique stuff, and it's just good to get, you know, because people are asking questions and maybe there are questions that you have. There's a lot of, obviously, lower belts, a lot of upper belts on there that are helping answer those questions. So that's a really good resource outside of the classroom. And I don't know if I can mention this or not, but I'm also part of the Blue Belt Mafia. So that's
exclusive.
And it was funny, they added me as soon as they saw there was a picture of me getting my blue belt. I was like added to that. I was like, whoa, is this an Illuminati? It might be. Luis Brasilva and Silverback Koa, they're the admins on that, and they you know, really good sources. We have actually some of the black belts that have and upper belts that have contributed a lot of technique information and other information there. So
I know we say it all the time, but like, just I was just mentioning to you this morning a defense to somebody who had a pretty good triangle, like comment was made to me once, like when they go to grab your leg when they have the triangle and you're trying to stack them to sprawl out. I just happened to go to be taking notes the other day, and I flipped to that page, and I just saw it, and for some reason stuck in my mind. I actually used it last night, but like, reviewing your own notes might be one of the easiest ways to kind of get information. You might not get new stuff, but it's stuff you already know, you know, but you forget, and I think it...
Which then would make it new stuff, Phil.
Yeah, true. Yeah. It kind of really helps. I'll do it every once in a while. I'll flip back through pages and be like, yeah, I did know that, you know.
Or in an app.
Yeah.
My BJJ notes.
Yeah.
And see that very clearly. Add to it one of our premier sponsor, My BJJ notes. So, yeah, if you're not taking notes, I mean, we've said it, we beat it to death, but it's probably one of the best ways to really shorten that learning curve is taking those notes, actively adding to those notes. And My BJJ notes is a tremendous app on both iTunes and the Google Play Store to be able to take those notes and refer back to them.
Yeah, I've said it before, like, I feel like if I could just remember everything I've learned and do it right, I'd be pretty good at jiu-jitsu, but it's the fact that I forget everything and I do most of it wrong the first 10 million times, you know? Yeah. That I think the notes is bigger than people think.
It really is. And right, we've been exposed to the entire curriculum, fundamentals curriculum,
yeah,
multiple times.
Yeah.
Right? So if we did know everything in there, we'd be really good at jiu-jitsu. But we're not.
It's true, yeah.
So take notes so that you can get better. Right? I mean, yeah.
There's a lot of different, like, people on YouTube, different articles you can read, like that mountain video I sent was a part of an article just going over concepts of pressure and applying pressure and angles and, you know, grips and anchor points and all that stuff. And you know, they always say, like, if you take away one little thing from a seminar or an article or something, that it's, you know, worth your time.
Yeah, and I think we should probably share that with the audience. If you can share that link on
the
Facebook page.
No, that was, I'm not familiar with that website really, but I know it's a big one, the BJJ Fanatics. Do they have a lot of blogs and stuff on there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go on and like them.
I haven't explored them very much, but that was a super good article.
It really was. It had in depth. That's where I saw the Murillo Bustamante mount stuff. And a bunch of other people who are really good at jiu-jitsu talking about stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, really good stuff. And just to kind of mention to everyone out there, you know, people ask all the time, how do we support the campaign? Get out there and do jiu-jitsu first off, man. Get out there. If you're not signed up for a class, get out there and do it.
And try to get all your friends addicted.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's funner when you have friends. Although, you know what? If you don't make friends readily, you'll probably make friends really quick in jiu-jitsu because they're really cool, fun people to hang out with.
True.
So for all those folks out there looking, you know, how they can support us, just go, you know, if you have any suggestions for the show, email us at the BJJCampaignPodcast@gmail.com. We'll do our best to get your topics and discuss them on the show.
Yeah, those are some of the best ones, is ones your friends have brought up and stuff like that, because we don't always think about, you know, we think about what we're currently working on and what we're currently at, thinking and stuff. So that's always some of the best topics.
No, I love it. I love those topics. And people are interested in it, right? And so like our Facebook page, BJJ Campaign Podcast, and our YouTube channel. On the YouTube channel, like we said before, we have some of the episodes that we've done previously, and also a catalog of the Origin Immersion Jiu-Jitsu Camp that we went to and took videos on. And to all those BJJ campaign warriors out there, maybe some of you guys are going to the Toro Cup next Saturday.
The 8th.
Toro Cup 12. If you are, we're going to be there. So, you know, come up and say hey to me and Phil. We're helping support that Toro Cup and sponsorship and are really excited about going. So come up and say hello to us. And, you know, if you're not out there doing something good or trying to be better, get out there and do it. Get out there and train. Have fun. You know, do jiu-jitsu. It's super fun.
It's the best.
I'm about to feed them to the sharks right now.
Get them hype right now.
Yeah. You know the ground is up.
Yeah.
Everybody that trains, you know the game.
Yeah.
So let's get it. Slap it up, bump it, and roll.
Hey.
Yeah, that's the way that it goes.
All right.
Ain't no better way to better yourself in this game. You're feeling the growth. It's time on the mat. We put in the work. Believe it ain't easy, I know. But we train for the love of the game, the love of the art. Now slap it up, bump it, let's roll.